Morning, everybody. I am actually starting a new job today with the Indiana Department of Transportation, doing some survey work for them. So my commute is actually going to be quite a bit longer. It used to be about 10 minutes. Now it'll be 25, basically. So the podcasts are actually going to get longer from now on, which I think will be a good thing. Yeah, so I'm probably going to be posting this video soon after I shoot it. So like for a long time, the podcast will still be 10 or 15 minutes because they're the ones that I have posting for the next few months are all recorded before I'm recording this. But eventually the podcast will become a little longer, about 25 minutes each. So I want to continue our discussion about the Franciscan School of Theology and, give some reflections on Blessed John Duns Scotus, who is one of the other major players, I would say, within the Franciscan School of Theology. Last time in this series, we went over St. Bonaventure, talked about a number of his works, his writing style, things like that. So I want to do something similar for Blessed John Duns Scotus. Now, full disclosure here, I do not know as much about Blessed John Duns Scotus' writings as I do about St. Bonaventure's. I've read a lot more of St. Bonaventure's work than I have Scotus, but I have read some of Scotus, a number of his bits of his ordinatios, which, to my recollection, an ordinatio is basically a work, I think it almost means like outline or something like that, and it's basically a work where the author would give the outline of his entire, like all of his views on a subject. So philosophy or theology was basically what Blessed John Duns Scotus was writing his ordinatio on. And it's quite a long work. There are four ordinatios, four books of the ordinatio. The first one, it seems, is almost totally in English now. There are a few of his distinctions, which are kind of like chapters within the work. There are a few of his distinctions that are not compiled, at least in the versions of that first book that I have seen. You can find the first book and bits of the second, bits of the third, and bits of the fourth online, even if you just type in Duns Scotus Ordinatio 1, like Roman numeral 1. Or two or three or four, it should pop up. I think the PDF at least comes under, it's on a website called Aristophile, and you can get the PDF from that website and download it. As far as I know, you know, it's open source, so I definitely took advantage of that. I mean, what I actually do with a lot of works is because I don't have a lot of time to sit down and read. Like I'll read in the mornings and read on the weekends, a little bit at night maybe, but I don't have a whole ton of time just to sit down and actually read. And so one of the real benefits of modern technology is that if you have a PDF of a book, you can really easily turn it into an MP3 file. Now, it's going to be a pretty rough MP3 file. I mean, you can use online text-to-audio converters, and that's what I do, is I just use online text-to-audio converters. And it works out pretty good, actually. I mean, you gotta, you know, it's not going to take all the paragraph numbers out. If you wanted to, you could do the work, and you could turn the PDF into a Word document, and then remove any reference to numerals in that document, and therefore it would, you know, take those out. But I don't really mind it. Like, you know, most of these works, the paragraphs are numbered, right? And so it definitely brings an interesting, because every few minutes or even 30 seconds or so, whenever it hits a new paragraph, it says a number, which I don't find that annoying. I actually find it a little helpful because I can kind of keep track, you know, hey, if I thought that part was really interesting, you know, I can kind of figure out where it was at in the book to look it up in the PDF file later. So anyway, if people find that helpful, if you want to do that, there are a number of online free text-to-audio converters. There's one that I've found that is, you can do an unlimited amount of characters, and you can use it in an unlimited amount of time. So I find it very helpful. It's like, it's called SEO, text-to-audio converter, SEO. So anyway, so I guess I want to get now to what are my thoughts on Blessed John Duns Scotus, his writings, things like that. First off, just to give an overview of what time he lived, who he was. He, along with St. Bonaventure, they were both Franciscan friars, which makes sense. They're the key players within the Franciscan school of theology. And he lived from basically the, I want to say, like the 1250s, 1260s, until the early 1300s. So I think it was like 310 or something that he lived. I probably don't have those dates exact, but you get the idea. That's like around the area of time when he lived. Mid to late 1200s to early 1300s. I personally, I don't know about you guys, but I don't have a lot of interest in like exact dates on most things. Just to know the general idea of when things happened, I think is really all I usually need, and to have like a timeline in my head of history. I find that very, very helpful. You know, just to have from all of known history, you know, I have a timeline in my head from studying it about, you know, the sequence of events, basically, or large events, right? And I find that very helpful just in life, for life in general, because, you know, the adage, if you don't know history, you're doomed to repeat it. And I don't want to be caught repeating, especially the more horrible instances in history. So he lived around that time, mid to late 1300s to early, or mid to late 1200s, 13th century, to early 1300s or the 14th century. It took me a long time to like get used to switching from like saying 1300 is the same as 14th century. I don't know if anybody else has had it feels the same way, but it like took me a long time to kind of get that in my head, get that down in my head. You know, I don't know, maybe I'm just not as smart as other people, but it definitely took me a little while to get used to doing that. Anyway, so his writing style, Scotus's writing style, is quite different from St. Bonaventure's, I would say. Because he's a very philosophical thinker. His main like thrust, I think, is philosophy. He's known today more as a philosopher than he was a theologian, although he was both, and contributed a great deal to both aspects of the intellectual life, the scholarly life. But today he is thought, at least as far as I know, more of a philosopher than he is a theologian. So he does write quite a bit differently. He writes in a very, I would say, a very analytical way as compared to St. Bonaventure. I categorized this last time for St. Bonaventure, but I think St. Bonaventure writes in a very fluid sort of a way. He's much easier to read. You don't have to know a whole bunch of terms going into reading him. I think most people that are into their Catholic faith could pick up that book, particularly his Breviloquium or the Itinerarium or whatnot, Triple Way probably too, could pick up those books and read them pretty easily. I don't think you would need a lot of introduction. But like I said last time with St. Bonaventure, he writes in a very scholastic way. You just have to get used to his writing style. He kind of writes so that you create these trees of connections in your mind. He'll start with one topic and branch out to another two, and those two branch out to more and more, you know. And then he'll move on to another idea and do the same thing again. And Scotus does that to a certain extent, definitely. He kind of does that branching out, the sort of tree writing, as I call it. I'm sure there's an actual technical term for that, but I don't know it. Yeah, so, but Scotus does write in a much more technical way than St. Bonaventure does. St. Bonaventure doesn't, at least in the works of his that I've read, doesn't give a whole lot of actual like citations of people. Like he'll quote them and he'll say, you know, this is, you know, from some father or something, but he won't usually give the exact name of the person. And he won't give page numbers or anything like that. So like scholars later on have had to compile all of those things, all of those references to be used in footnotes and stuff. Whereas SCOTUS, it seems in the writings that I've read of him, that he, even in the original text, cited like crazy, giving even the exact location of things within certain documents. Like, you know, he cites Aristotle, Avicenna, Averroes. So for those of you who don't know, Aristotle was a Greek philosopher, ancient Greek philosopher, lived in the 300s BC. Averroes was a Muslim philosopher who lived in the 1000s, the 11th century, I believe. He was very influential within Western thought, Western Christian thought during that time, because he was kind of the first main commentator to become known in the West on Aristotle. And then Averroes was a Spanish Muslim from what we now call Spain, the Iberian Peninsula, in the, I want to say the 1100s, mid to late 1100s, I think. So Bonaventure mainly comments, from what I've read, on Aristotle, Avicenna, and Averroes. Those were kind of the three main people that were circulating in his day. And Thomas Aquinas also cites those individuals as well quite a lot. So he does do a lot of citing of different people, the way a lot of his, at least in his Ordinatio. So it's set up as like a question. There's a question, and then he kind of gives an answer, but he'll usually give the answer in two parts. He'll say, basically, this is what other people have said about this question, what answers other people have said, and he kind of compiles all those different answers, and then he'll say, this is what I think on this question. And that's kind of how I've noticed it within at least the Ordinatio, which is the main body of his work that's translated into English. But he's just a much more technical type of a writer. For those of you who know philosophy and modern philosophy in particular, I'm not super well versed in modern philosophy, but I think I have enough knowledge of it to be able to say this, at least. It's broken up into two camps: the analytical philosophers and the continental philosophers. The continentals are called continentals because they're from the continent or Europe, and they usually write in a much more fluid sort of a way. It's not very technical. It doesn't use a lot of like formal logic and things like that. Even like formal Aristotelian logic, it doesn't use a lot of that. So yeah, that's kind of what they're... They have just like a different writing style, different way of doing things. One of the main like thinkers of the continental style would be somebody like Friedrich Nietzsche. I think also Martin Heidegger, who I did an episode on in the past, is also considered a continental philosopher. They were both Germans, so you know they're on the continent and they're doing what's considered continental philosophy. So then there's also the analytical type of philosophy in today's kind of modern school, and that mostly stems from the British Isles and North America. And the content, or the analytical philosophers, are much more analytical. They use lots of formal logic. They actually, the one of the main kind of creators of this school, or at least the main person that people kind of congregate around, is Bertrand Russell, who lived in the late 1800s to the early 1900s. And he was an English philosopher, and he was also a mathematician. He had his doctorate in both, and he really created what we now call like formal logic, formal modern logic, where they use all the symbols, mathematical symbols, for things. And it's like, it's basically like, it feels like its own type of mathematics, because it is. I mean, mathematics is logic, and logic is also, you know, a type of mathematics. A lot of computer science people have to learn logic, even though, you know, it's this discipline of philosophy. But I think also maybe people are now considering it a discipline of mathematics as well. It's kind of a joint, it's jointly shared by both disciplines. But anyway, Bertrand Russell kind of came up, to my knowledge, or at least really concretized our modern form of logical writing.
Sorry.
So yeah, the whole reason I say that about analytical and continental philosophers today is I see similarities between the way that St. Bonaventure writes. He's more like a continental philosopher. And I would say Sciorris is kind of more of an analytical philosopher. You can kind of see this difference too in Plato versus Aristotle. So both being ancient Greek philosophers, very, very, very famous. Plato writes in a much more fluid style, a much more sort of literary style, like St. Bonaventure does. But Aristotle, for the most part, writes in a much more analytical type of a style. It's much more like a textbook, you know, a lot more definitions of things. He really kind of, it's much more logically laid out. It's not as fluid. So, I don't know, that's kind of how I would characterize these two different thinkers within the Franciscan School of Theology. Like I said, I mean, I don't know Scotus super well yet. I'm kind of just wading in. I feel like I'm ankle deep compared to his whole body of works, even just the works in English. So yeah, it's been really fun going through these two thinkers. I first fell in love with St. Bonaventure and the way that he writes. I mean, now I disagree with him on a couple things. I disagree with him on on human nature. You know, Bonaventure takes more of the idea that the soul is a separate substance from the body. And I disagree with that. I mean, granted, in his day, this hadn't been defined yet by the church. But even still, it hasn't been fully defined. I mean, the Council of Vienne in the 1311 said that the soul is the form of the body, but it didn't explain what form meant. You know, are we taking a Platonic view of that or an Aristotelian view of that? And that's kind of the main difference there. Bonaventure takes more of a Platonic or a Neoplatonic view of that, and so do all the church fathers, or at least the vast majority of them. And so Bonaventure is much more in line with many of the church fathers because of his Neoplatonic bent. And he has that sort of bent because he's rooted in Augustine. He's rooted in a church father. So it only makes sense. So I think a lot of people really enjoy Bonaventure for that reason. And I do as well. He's a very mystical writer, which is also just incredible. It's hard to put into words, really, how beautiful his writings are. And it's just amazing. I really find the main note that I get from St. Bonaventure's writings are beauty. It's beauty. It's beautiful. And in the more artistic sort of a way. Whereas Blessed John Duns Scotus, his writings are very beautiful. They're very beautiful. But in a more philosophical way and a more technical sort of a way. They are very beautifully composed, though, I would argue. So, yeah, I think that pretty much does it on this sort of overview, these two overview episodes I'm giving on the Franciscan School of Theology, particularly on St. Bonaventure and Blessed John Duns Scotus. There are other players in the Franciscan School of Theology that are important, like St. Anthony of Padua, St. Lawrence of Brindisi. Those are kind of the main two that are popping into my head right now. I'm trying to think of some others. There are definitely others. Oh, St. Maximilian Kolbe. There are others that aren't saints as well. I don't remember their names off the top of my head. Saints or blesseds, that is. But, yeah. All right, so I think that pretty much does it for this episode today. Almost to work here. And we will pick this up on the flip side. All right, thanks, y'all.